You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, everybody, Trey Wingo here, and the Michael K. Show with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg starts right now. Question, will this be a day without a Don rant?
We shall see, Trey, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on a chilly Friday. Chilly Friday.
Don't use the word chilly. That is disrespectful to what's going on.
It's worse than chilly.
It is considerably worse than chilly.
When I drove the kids to school today, it was A-Rod. It was 13.
That was 13. The actual temperature?
Yeah, 13, yeah. Actual temperature.
It was feels like zero. The feels like high today was 10.
It's not what you want.
It's no. Not what you want.
Anyway, thank you for joining us on this January 29th, 2021. It's Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. And after that, Peter, the other 20.
That's for you to handle.
That's your responsibility.
I got it.
It's not us. I mean, right. you can listen to the podcast and all, but that's really not our thing. You have to do what you have to do. Before we dive headfirst into the more information coming out about Deshaun Watson, sometimes, and it's rare, Peter, it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
I take shots at Don that he can't control Dave Maloney. He refuses to control him.
I just want to tell you,
by him.
I don't know what this is yet. I've only heard it mentioned in hushed tones.
Right. Well, yesterday, Alexis Lafreniere, am I saying that right, Don?
Not really.
Now, how do I say it?
Alexei Lafreniere
scored
If it ends in Franier, doesn't it have to be Yay? Lafreniere?
I'm just going by what
Don's
I'm told.
Don's a guy. He announces the name.
And you'll hear it coming up from the King.
Okay. All right, so the King that Don is referring to is Kenneth Albert, who has the same birthday as me. Same birthday as me on Tuesday. And he's such a lunatic, Don. He so wants to be the first one to get the happy birthday wish in.
Yeah, this is a thing.
He will text me at like 12 o'clock and 30 seconds. And the only one who ever really beats him is my sister. She'll do it at like 12 and 1 second. But Kenny wants to say to me before I could say it to him.
Right.
And the
Pretty
way
cool.
things are going in this world right now, I'm sleeping at midnight. I just am.
Well, it used to be a Super Bowl thing, right? Like we'd be somewhere in Indianapolis or Tampa, and you might have a fighting chance to be out or something. But now with the kids and home,
no, it's over.
It's over. Well,
anyway, here is a historic goal for the Rangers' number one pick in the first round. Because he gets his first goal in the NHL, first point in the NHL.
First point.
First point. Six games where, you know, he's had some chances to score. He had a lot of chances to score last night.
Okay.
But he was turned away at the doorstep. But not in overtime, and here's how it broke down.
Here comes Blackwell with Lafreniere. The pass is close. Lafreniere scores! An overtime winner. His first National Hockey League goal. The Rangers win it 3-2. Alexei Lafreniere mobbed by his Ranger teammates.
Lafreniere! What is with Dave, Don? Does he care that much?
Yes. You have to ask.
I mean, he sounded like he was gagging after the first.
But he's consistent. That's the same sound he always makes.
No. The yelp I get. But if you listen closely, after the yelp, there's like gasping for breath.
Let me hear it again.
It's in a word, Peter.
Troubling?
Here comes Blackwell with Lafreniere. The pass is close. Lafreniere scores! an overtime winner, his first National Hockey League goal. The Rangers win it 3-2. Alexei Lafreniere mobbed by his Ranger teammates.
Oh, my God. It sounded like he was weeping.
I give a guy credit for caring that much. I mean, he's been doing this a long time.
That sound was incredible.
Well, you know what we did for you, Peter, because we knew you'd think it was incredible. We isolated it.
We could do something with that for sure.
Now, Kenny, unlike Don, considers himself an artiste. He's not liking Maloney jumping on his call. He ruined the call. That's a call. Like, that's like calling Derek Jeter's first hit. This kid is supposed to be great.
You know what,
his first goal. Kenny would be on the call. Instead, the call is ruined by...
You know what? I don't like to agree with Michael on this subject because I think Dave's great and I think it's hilarious. I will say, though, if the kid goes on to be...
a Hall of Famer.
Gretzky.
Right.
Or Crosby or whoever. I'll even say Pavel Bure. Whoever. That call becomes iconic, and then they use the TV call.
Yeah, you hear
Kenny's out.
Well, it's not a problem using Sam's call. It's a Hall of Fame. Sam's a Hall of Famer. I just like, if you compare it to all the other Yelps, it's identical.
It's I know. Do you have all of them?
Does it make you feel a little, I mean, is there a little schadenfreude, Don, because he steps on a lot of your calls that he stepped on Kenny with a big
foot. It doesn't bother
me
when he steps on mine, and I don't think it bothers Kenny.
If we had Kenny on the show, which we're not going to do, if we had Kenny on the show and injected him with sodium pentothal, he would admit that that annoys the heck out of him.
First of all, he already takes sodium pentothal every day to work every the six games he has a day. He's calling a high school game tonight in Southern Jersey. He's taking it right now.
No,
Southern Jersey, so that's a high...
Yeah, he's traveling.
Yeah.
He's traveling.
South Jersey. Nobody ever says Southern Jersey.
I wouldn't be caught dead in either one.
Well, that's not nice.
I'm just kidding.
Beautiful. You couldn't
afford
a place in Cape May.
Is Princeton in Southern Jersey? Tom, don't.
I think he could afford a place. Yeah, I think he got a lot of money.
I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Let's not get insane here. But
I'm sure Andrew should want to jump you too.
But I love Princeton. I'm a big Princeton guy.
You should have gone there instead of Maryland.
Well, wasn't an option. But the town itself, the Record Exchange, terrific.
Oh, terrific. Get some vinyl there, right?
I do.
Oh.
I go by.
Jersey
there you go.
So.
Why not? And if you go there, you'll hear this.
You hear that in New Jersey.
But here's the disconnect you have, Michael, that I'm trying to connect.
Tell me the disconnect, Don. I want to know.
No, because every Ranger fan loved it. Because they know that Dave's invested. Remember, Dave was the one that was mad at you for wearing the Ranger jersey when you lost the bet. Because he didn't understand how losing a bet means you wear a Ranger jersey. He takes a lot of pride.
Yeah, okay. It didn't bother Jim Dolan, though, but it bothered Dave.
Hey, well, you don't think that makes fans happy, too?
Whatever.
They don't care about Jim Dolan. They care about Dave Maloney.
You know,
Dave Maloney's calling the game.
Yourself.
He's doing the same thing the fans are doing.
You contradict yourself, though, Michael.
Because, what?
Because you know we've talked about this.
Right.
One of the reasons you don't get your flowers, as they say, the same way some other local announcers do, is because you're not a homer. And that is part of the homer vibe. That's what Dave is doing.
No. Listen, I get it. Analysts tend to lean toward homerism. But the play-by-play guy, you show excitement. I show much more excitement a Yankee game-winning home run than like an Indians game-winning home run. But you got to let the call play out. Then you could, spew whatever you want.
But what are these unwritten rules you're talking about?
They're not unwritten. They're written.
I don't think they're written anyway.
Oh, they're written in every single broadcasting manual, every journalism school in the country. Don't step on the play-by-play guy.
I don't think that's true, though.
I don't think that's true at all.
But it is unwritten
for sure.
What's
going on. And it's not my broadcast. It's not Kenny's broadcast. It's the Ranger fans' broadcast. They want to hear their favorite team. They can't get in front of the TV, so they want to hear their game, and they want to hear emotion, and they love Dave.
Kenny had emotion. Listen to Kenny. Kenny was emotional.
Let me hear it again. I want to hear what Kenny was trying to do.
Blackwell with Lafreniere. The pass across. Lafreniere scores! An overtime winner. His first National Hockey League goal.
I'm not talking about
it. The Rangers win it 3-2.
I'm not talking about Kenny.
Alexei Lafreniere.
Kenny's emotions
by his Ranger teammates.
But Michael always makes it out to be that he ruined Kenny's call. It's not his call.
It is his call.
He's just doing his job. Right. And Dave's doing his job. Sometimes it's going to overlap. You don't think Yankee fans love it when Paul jumps on you? It's not like you say an artiste. Well, you're not an artiste. It's not like that you have your call and you go out and sell it somewhere on a corner. Right?
Then why?
I mean, you broadcast for the Yes Network to the Yankee fans and to get the information, but it's all part and parcel to the entertainment value of the broadcast.
But I mean, if you walk into John Filippelli, the president of production at Yes, if you walk into his office, he literally has 100 Emmys, and a lot of them national Emmys.
Right.
Right? And he has told all the analysts on Yes, let the play-by-play call finish and then jump in. He even said it to Paul, don't jump on Michael, don't jump on Ryan, don't do it.
Right.
So if a professional like Filippelli, a legend in the business, he's in the Hall of Fame, don't you think he knows how it should be done?
Well, he knows, but he also knows that you can only do so much and that Paul's a very popular announcer. Paul hasn't lost his job. Right?
Of
if it's so
not.
Sacrosanct, if it's so written in stone, Peter, then Filippelli would have fired Paul O'Neill. But he won't do it. Why? Because he'll take it because Paul is a great analyst that the Yankee fans love. And they love the fact that he gets emotional and gets excited.
But he doesn't step that much anymore.
Dave doesn't step that much. It's like once or twice a year on the Super Bowl. If he was doing that, you know, in a 5-2 game against, you know, the Ottawa Senators on like a Thursday in January, all right, that's a little much.
Okay, but he's doing it with a Sabre game. That's not a big game. It's just because a big goal for the kid.
It was a goal scored by somebody that might, you know, they're hoping is going to be one of the great players in this league.
That's right. And now the call's been stained forever.
No, the
Sully.
Sully.
Again, I don't want to embarrass you. We run it up the poll, you'd lose like 90-10.
No, I don't think so.
Because you make it seem like, well, but what arrogance. Like, you're Picasso.
Right.
Calling the game.
No,
I'm just calling
Picasso.
The game.
Don,
I'm just calling
Don,
the game.
Have you ever heard the Chris Chambliss home run call by Keith Jackson, how Cosell steps all over it? You think that's cool?
I thought it was terrific.
It's
Howard Cosell.
Gone. I mean,
Keith Jackson.
Why?
Everybody's involved.
Michael, Keith Jackson wasn't happy.
Michael, I hate to do this, but I have to because I'm a real friend. I'm going to hold up the mirror here. You realize how selfishly motivated this entire thing is, right?
Not a bit. Not a bit.
You're
I don't care at all.
You just happen to be saying you're defending the job that you have and going after the job that the other person has. I mean, you're protecting your own interests here.
Listen. Once it's out of my mouth, as Don said, I don't own it. It's just for the way it's supposed to exist in time. You're not supposed to have somebody stepping on you.
But
listen,
why?
I can't win over you guys. Forget it.
I just think this is just a made-up rule.
You're right. I'm wrong.
You're right. Thank you.
I give up because I'm not going to have one of these four-hour arguments where Don won't give and I won't give.
Mom.
You're right. I'm wrong. Let him step and vomit all over the call. You're right. I'm dead wrong. I'm sorry I brought it up. I'll never bring it up again. Ever.
I don't understand why you're getting so frustrated.
No, because you will not give in, and I won't give in, but now I am giving in because I don't want to ruin the show. You're right, I'm wrong. Let him throw up all over every call. That's right, that's the way it should be done. That's what fans want. Good. We can move on. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Deep drive
Friday
to left field. Blah! That's definitely what should be done because the fans love it. Love it. You know, the fans would also like people dancing naked on the dugout, too. Are you going to give them that?
You were just out of your mind, really.
Yeah, I'm out of my mind.
So Dave Maloney gets emotional on a call that was, like, memorable, makes it even more memorable, and you compare it to being vomited on?
It makes it memorable because it's a train wreck.
I don't think that. I think it's funny. I think it's emotional. It's memorable.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I'm wrong. So the Texans today had a press conference, and the GM, Nick Caserio, said, we have no intention of trading Deshaun Watson. And the coach comes out and says, David Culley, I expect Deshaun Watson to be here. And that will live in infamy with the lines, Jamal Adams is going to be a Jet for a long, long time.
Right.
And then Dave Gettleman saying, we didn't sign Odell Beckham Jr. to trade him. And within weeks, they were both gone. Now, I hope, because I certainly think that this is the solution to this endemic problem in sports, I hope that the Texans say, we're not trading you, and if you don't play for us, you'll never play in the league again. I hope they stand to that. Mm-hmm. And then that will stop this blueprint that's been laid out for every single player that just gets something, you know, a fly up his butt, and I want to be traded. If the Texans hold firm, because you know what? If they trade him, they're going to stink anyway. They're going to stink anyway. So stink with him sitting there, losing money, losing a year off his career that he'll never get back. Let him do it. Let's play the greatest game of chicken of all time. See who blinks. See who blinks. And everybody's going to say, well, you'll upset agents that won't direct their players to the Texans. If the Texans offer more money, they'll go to the Texans. And the Texans will draft people. They'll have to report. That's all there is to it. But when you're going to give in every time somebody says, imagine saying, I demand to be traded, and you have a no-trade clause. Somebody on Twitter actually made a really good point, Don. If you have a no-trade clause and you demand to be traded, then that invalidates the no-trade clause. Okay, we'll trade you, but we're going to trade you wherever we want. So not only is he demanding a trade, which would take the organization out of the knees, but he's demanding a trade, and then he's telling you where he's going to go, which completely ruins the organization's leverage. So from now on, the next CBA, if you demand a trade and you have a no-trade clause, the no-trade clause is validated. We can trade you wherever we want. Yeah. And then teams would then, players, Don, would probably sit there and think about whether they demand a trade or not, because they could be traded to Timbuktu.
But I don't know if you'd get enough players to care enough to even bring it up during the negotiations. So I don't know. That would be a great thing to do, right? But it's not going to happen. But let me ask you this. If you're a Jet fan, if you're the Jets right now, aren't you hoping that Houston plays hardball?
Yes.
Because it doesn't sound like he's coming to the Jets. Now, if you root for him to stay in Houston, then he's definitely not coming to you. But what feels like a less than 50% chance, and God forbid if he ends up in Miami, Michael, and you got to contend with Allen and Watson and Bill Belichick for the next possible 10 years? If I'm a Jet fan, I'm hoping that the Texans play hardball, because I don't know if you're getting him anyway.
If you're not getting him, Don, then you do want the Texans to play hardball, unless they trade him to the Bears and you don't even care.
Then, you know, Bears, 49ers, you don't care. But there's still that chance, because, again, I don't know, but Miami, when you talk about, let's say he doesn't want to go to the Jets for whatever reason, then the team that could offer the most outside the Jets would be Miami. Right? Because they got the third overall.
Absolutely. Pick. They have the most.
Now, if he doesn't want to go to Miami, I don't know what his list is. But unless I know I'm number one and I've got Miami right behind me that would take over if he doesn't join me, stay in Houston. I don't want to take the chance.
You know,
whatever my 30% chance of him coming here, I don't want to deal with the chance that he's going to end up in Miami and I'd have to deal with two of the best quarterbacks in football for the next decade.
I was listening to Barton Hahn today. I was in the car, and they brought up a point that's really interesting too about the Jets. So Adam Schefter he told Hahn once when he was in studio, I never say anything for effect. I say things that are based on things that I've been told. So he said the Jets shouldn't get their hopes up. So you can wonder whether or not the Jets are the ones that told him we don't want him, we're not going to give up that much, or Deshaun, but he didn't just make that up out of thin air. But the thing that they said that really caught my attention, the Texans have no leverage. So you keep hearing people, well, they should give them every first-round draft pick over the next 2 years, that's four, and give them their best defensive player, and give them Sam Darnold. And Hahn and Bart Scott said, if they give them all of that, who's going to give them all of that? Because If the guy's saying, I want to go here, I want to go there, you don't empty out the bank. You say, okay, we'll give you this, we'll give you this, and if it's not good enough, move along. They don't have any leverage, the Texans. That's why their only leverage is to sit him down and say, you're either playing for us or you're not playing for anybody ever again. That'll stop it. It'll nip it right in the bud. But Peter, I think Don makes a great point. If he's traded to the Dolphins, the Jets are in for a decade of angst.
It's so much pressure now. It is. These are such high stakes for the Jets. You have Buffalo poised to be a solid team, at least for a few years. Like, I'm not saying we're heading into dynasty time in Buffalo, but this is a solid team. New England is going to retool because they are the Patriots. And now if Deshaun Watson ends up on a Miami team, guys, this Miami team was pretty good with a mix of Tua, who people don't think knows how to play at this moment, and Ryan Fitzpatrick. They were already a pretty good team. Barely missed the playoffs.
Yeah.
So they get Watson? Ugh, that would be a tough spot for Joe Douglas.
I wonder if the Texans have the intestinal fortitude to say no. Just say no, like Nancy Reagan used to say. Just say no. I want to see if they can just say no. Well, you're playing for us.
I mean, it's a disaster either way, right?
Right, right. So having a disaster where you look like the winner.
Because like you said, whether he plays for you or not, you just came off a lousy season with him, you know, because you've got so much other work to do. Now, nobody wants to play for you. I don't think that's going to change once they trade him. Like, their image is damaged. So the one thing I guess you could do is, well, if I'm going to go down, you're going down with me. You're either going to play or you're not going to play. You either play for us or you're done. I'm not giving in to you.
Well, also, they're sort of in a spot to do it in the sense that they're not going to be good next year. They weren't good with him.
Right.
I mean, they're a little ways away. I mean, you want to talk about being in a scary spot? Houston's on the verge of Hopkins is gone, Clowney is gone, Watt, it's waning with J.J. Watt. You wouldn't be shocked if J.J. Watt says, I want out if Watson's not playing. Should J.J. Watt, should a Hall of Fame player waste these last couple years just sitting on a team that's basically now destined to be trash because they can't work it out with their quarterback?
Well, you have to then work the PR of, hey, don't blame me that we're in this situation. Blame the quarterback who refuses to play.
You know, we told you this yesterday, Houston's leverage. They can fine Deshaun Watson $95,877 for missing minicamp. So he'll obviously miss minicamp. Boom, you just made yourself $100,000 if you're the team. Then they could fine him $50,000 per day for each day of training camp missed, plus 1 week salary, $620,000 for each preseason game missed. Let them miss them all. Let's see at what point the money kicks in where Watson goes, what am I doing here? And then if he says, you know what, I'm out of football, I retire, then the Texans just save $21 million that right. They could spend on the free agent market.
And how long would he have to stay out for?
Whenever you come back, that contract's still in force.
Now, what about the whole, all right, I'll come back, but then in training camp is, my hamstrings hurt. I can't play.
You know what, you got to be willing to play that game, Don. That's a chance you got to take.
Because at the end of the day, even if he does that, right, so he's able to collect his money because he's technically on the roster, right? He's not holding out, but he's not playing because he's faking a back injury or a hamstring injury or something. He's kind of only hurting himself because now he's not playing. And football players who miss a full year, they almost miss 2 years, right? Because then you try to come back that second year and you got to make up for lost time. And even at the quarterback, you really want to throw a season and a half, 2 years away to make a point? Or would you just say, all right, they're not giving to me. I'm going to have to try to make this work. I'm going to have to try to work with them, and we're going to have to play. I'm going to have to play out my contract.
I know what everybody says, that the owners have always had the upper hand over the players, and they don't, you know, we had this yesterday. They don't live up to the owners do live up to their contract. If they didn't, they'd get sued. The contracts are not guaranteed for the most part. So they have a right to cut you and not pay you. But in this case, the Texans have the upper hand. They have a contract that, amazingly enough, Deshaun Watson signed in September. 4 months ago, he signed in September. He knew exactly who the owner was. He knew exactly what this organization was about, the clown show that it is. But he took the guaranteed money and then decided after this season, he knew that his wide receiver had been traded. He knew all of this stuff, but still took the money and now says, I want to be traded. And I only want to be traded where I want to be traded. I mean, the unmitigated gall. And that's why I said that James Harden comes out looking better than this. He has 2 years left on his contract, turned down a $90 million 2-year extension because he knew he was going to ask out of Houston. Now, he could have taken that $90 million and still asked out. Then he would be on the same equal footing as Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson signed a deal and 4 months later wants out, and everybody thinks that's cool? I don't, unless he can come on the show and tell me an exact reason that something happened in the last 4 months that convinced you that it was untenable. Now, they didn't listen to your suggestion to interview people for coaching. That was wrong. But you knew who these people are. You knew who Cal McNair is. You knew. But you took the $160 million guarantee, didn't you? Now, we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Sure do.
Very hot open, for sure.
People loved it, by the way.
Yeah. Jody sat me down today.
Good.
And kind of read me the riot act.
Good.
And said that something that Don and Peter have been preaching to me is right, and I've been wrong.
Hmm. I'm interested to hear this.
Is that a tease?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'll tell you what that is, and we'll take your phone calls. You know the number, 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg, and you also a chance to go inside the huddle, the big contest that's coming up as well, right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
What a first hour. I mean, out of the gates like Secretariat at the Belmont. Yeah. Think about it. I don't know if you could do a better hour.
Loved it.
Very strong.
Very strong. The Michael Kay Show, I don't know if you guys realize it, on 98.7 ESPN, is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Hope everybody's doing well. You know, we talked a lot in the first hour about Deshaun Watson. And I wonder, I mean, all of us think it's a no-brainer. The Jets should do everything they can to get him. Give whatever that they give to get him. I wonder if Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh really want him. I wonder if all the draft capital that Douglas has collected is so important to him to build this team the right way that he doesn't want him. And maybe they really do believe in Sam Darnold. But my flip to Joe would be this. If you gave up your first round draft pick this year and next year, you didn't have the other two picks. You gave them away. And you got them in the Jamal Adams trade. So you could say that would you have traded two first-round draft picks and Jamal Adams for Deshaun Watson? And you absolutely would have. Now, it's hard to give up the number two. If you could keep the number two and give the 23 and the two next year, obviously you do that. Because I really believe that other than saying you're going to sit here and not play, the Texans have very little leverage. Also, this guy's dictating where he wants to go. Now, I don't think the Jets would care nearly as much if he goes to Chicago or San Francisco. You know, they might meet him once every 4 years, and if they're lucky enough to get to a Super Bowl, maybe see him there.
Right.
But, boy, they have to really up the ante, Don, if it's between the Jets and Miami. You can't let Miami get him because then four games a year, you got Josh Allen for two, Deshaun Watson for two, and then whatever else Bill Belichick could put together in his dungeon. So I don't want to have to face that for the next decade.
I just think it comes down to this. It's a franchise that has not had a big-time quarterback in 50 years. All right? And they've had high picks. Sanchez was the fifth overall pick. Sam Darnold was the third overall pick, all right? And maybe Sam can turn out to be a superstar quarterback, but he hasn't shown that kind of level in the 3 years that he's been here. And you're going to have to pay to find out. Now you got a chance to get somebody, an established quarterback that has done it in this league, almost threw for 5,000 yards, dynamic offensive presence, seems to be the quarterback that is built for the future of the NFL. And you can have him. And you're going to have the arrogance to say, no, I'd rather hold on the picks and hope that I find the next Deshaun Watson on my watch. I don't think you can play that game. You can't play the what if. You can't hope that Fields becomes that. Or Zach Wilson becomes that. Or that even Sam Darnold becomes that. This is that. Okay, I need a quarterback that throws 5,000 yards. Well, here's one right here. It's gonna hurt to get that, but it's what we've been missing literally for 50 years. I don't know how you pass that up.
And that's if they have the option of it. And again, we don't know what seems to be true. If he's just not willing to do it, then there's nothing they can do.
But Michael said it well early in the week. There is a line of demarcation, right? You can't give him the entire franchise. You can't give up the next, five first-round picks you have over the next 5 years or something. So there is a time where you're like, that's just too much. But to give up the two first-rounders this year and next year?
Can I ask a question?
I'm good with that.
Is there a major difference besides the level of play and maybe the amount of his extension? Is there a major difference between Deshaun Watson forcing his way out of Houston and Matt Stafford forcing his way out of Detroit?
No, I don't think Matt Stafford's forcing his way out.
No.
Matt Stafford said, it's probably best that we part ways, and the Lions want to go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. They have a new coach, a whole new staff, a new GM, and Matt Stafford has certainly taken a lot of hits and slings and arrows in Detroit, played hurt, really did his job, was true to the community, and, at the age of 33, said, maybe it's time for me to go somewhere else. If the Lions have said, no, I think he stays.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson is demanding a trade.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Matt Stafford spoke with the Lions, and they agreed this is probably best for both sides.
I guess I'm having trouble verbalizing, but I think a lot of people in the audience will
understand what I'm
saying.
It's an issue for somebody in this business.
I know, it's a shame.
Yeah.
But it's hard to verbalize, but while you make salient points about honoring the contract, I just don't quite agree. And I can't put my finger on why. It just seems like Deshaun Watson, while he signed an extension, but I mean he got offered a ton of money. Who's going to say no? I don't want the extension.
Yeah, 73 million of that guaranteed.
He signs it,
and almost a $30 million bonus check that he got that he's not planning to give back. They gave that bonus check as part of the 4-year contract, so they got a year out of him for that $30 million on top of the salary.
But he goes out, plays hard for a season. They're terrible. He asked to have input on where they're going with the future. They ignore that. Why is he still obligated as a professional? Why is he obligated to not force his way out? Sort of to what Rich Kleiman was saying. I mean, you make it to this level. You become the best at your craft in the world to have power. He's supposed to honor the Texan franchise? Why? If I decided after signing a contract at ESPN and then they decided to change the direction of the show, Michael was out and they were going to bring in someone else or whatever, and I wasn't into it, and I was at that time the hottest commodity in radio, I'm obligated to just be like, well, they gave me a contract. Why would I not say, like, hey, I don't want to be here.
Well,
I want to go somewhere else.
We don't know exactly. Is it just that? Is it something else that ticked him off? Because, again, he signed this, what, Michael, in September?
September.
All right. So I don't know. Did he have a conversation with him before he signed the extension? Hey, I want more input? Or did that come after the fact? Because it sounded to me, because this organization didn't seem like they very much embrace input from their players. All right? Wasn't it the owner that just passed away? McNair said that he didn't want the players running the asylum. So if he was never told he was going to have input, then I don't think he has a kick coming. If they lied to him, Peter, then I kind of understand where you're coming from. If he was promised something that he didn't get in this deal, well, then you can understand why he'd want to get out of there. But if all of a sudden he wanted something that never was articulated to him, was never put into the contract, if they never said, you're going to have a say, and he signed the contract anyway, then why a year later is he demanding these things that weren't going to happen?
Now, okay, but here's a question. So besides the simple legalese of the contract, meaning we signed the paper, this is what we agreed to. When you sign a contract, your team is still allowed to trade you. That advantage goes...
Not him.
Not him.
Although not him. But by and large, in general, that is how it works. Teams tell players all the time, we love you, we're signing you for 5 years. A year later, they say, you know what, this thing's not going the way we want. Oh, you've been here for 9 years, you're part of the community, you're entrenched here. Sorry, you're going to go to Jacksonville. We don't hold them to any sort of standard.
Yeah, but they're living up to the contract. They're
Deshaun Watson
wanted a no trade clause. He got
it.
So now he's demanding that they trade him.
Right.
And what's their biggest asset has been devalued because they can only trade him where he wants to go.
So you'd have he doesn't have a kick coming. He has a no trade clause. He was worried that that would happen to him. It couldn't happen to him.
I'm really fussy about contracts, okay? And I understand that the contracts in football are not like contracts that we sign. But I'll tell you a quick story, and you can try to figure it out. I'm not going to tell you specifics. But I was here for a while. I think Don knows this. And there was a place that I really wanted to work. It wasn't radio. And they didn't seem to have any interest in me at all. And it would have been an easier day rather than the four and a half hour radio show. And they didn't. My agent, I found out later, my agent at the time didn't really connect with this group of people that I wanted to go to. And I signed a contract at ESPN. I re-signed here. I think it was a 3-year deal. And 2 days after I signed it, 2 days after my signature was on the paper, the place that I really, really, really wanted to work because it would have been an easier grind on me, reached out to me. Well, we didn't know you were available. We'd love you to do this. And I couldn't do it. I mean, I could have just walked to Tim, who's a friend of mine, said, you know what? But I put my name on a contract, and to me, that's sacrosanct. And although I wanted the other job because it would have made my life easier, I said, sorry, ESPN was there. I signed a deal. A deal is a deal is a deal. Why is that so hard to deal with?
But
in your situation, if the show changed and you just signed a contract, well, ESPN could be nice and let you out of it, or they could say, no, you either work here or you don't work. That's what the Texans could do. Yeah, you have the right to demand it, but ESPN could say, no, you can't go anywhere.
No, and listen, I don't think anyone's arguing that's not the Texans' right. I think you'd be crazy to just say they have no right. Of course they have a right. He signed the deal. I guess I just don't, you know, when you express, I hope they let him sit there to prove the point. Like, I don't root for ownership on any team to end up having that play out. Cause when push comes to shove, whether it's part of the contract or not, we know that when it behooves them, they don't give a damn about where the players go. Deshaun Watson already had a torn ACL his rookie year. He came back. He's learned firsthand how fickle this can be, and the way he plays the game, it could end in a second. So when he looks around at his team and he has J.J. Watt, one of the great players of all time, saying to him, dude, we're wasting your time. This season was a waste of your time.
Mm-hmm.
I understand how he starts getting the mindset of what am I doing? Then he goes, well, all right, let me try to be a part of building the future. Has a conversation. They decide, no, we're just going to continue down our path of being some Patriot South. Don't worry about it. I can't, while I understand and you are right from a legal sense, I just cannot support the Texans on that. I hope that he's able to figure it out.
I'm glad you brought it up. I'm not supporting the team over the player. I'm supporting the theory that you can't just up and move whenever you want. You shouldn't be able to do that. It can't be the wild, wild west. It's not fair to fan bases either. For every kid that owns a Deshaun Watson jersey.
But is it fair to those kids when the team trades the player?
No, that's not fair.
They've done it to us our whole lives. They kill us.
But here's the thing. You are talking about players in general. And players in general, I completely agree with you. All right? I understand why there isn't guaranteed contracts in the NFL because the career is so short and players get hurt and it makes it very, very difficult to sign a guy and have him make guaranteed money for 10 years if he plays an offensive line position where he can be out of the league in 6 months. But this isn't your average situation. It's a guy that signed an amazing contract where most of the money was guaranteed. He was able to negotiate a no-trade clause. He signed the contract in September. I'm not sure Watson kind of fits into that feel bad for the NFL player being taken advantage of.
Fair.
It kind of comes across more as, I signed a contract, and boy, do I regret it, because we stunk this year, and my organization doesn't know what it's doing. What I would say is maybe Watson should have done a little bit more homework before signing the deal and maybe try to get a little bit more of a say. He was smart enough to get the no-trade clause to give himself a little leverage, so I guess he wasn't 100% sold. But again, we're talking about a guy that was perfectly happy to spend the next 10 years with this organization in September. And then you fast forward a few months later, and now he doesn't want any part of the organization anymore. That's different than the guy that's stuck in a second year of a 5-year deal, making almost no guaranteed money, that was completely lied to, completely abused by the organization. Yeah, then I get it. I think this is a guy that I really feel bad for, Peter, because he's on a terrible team. But other than that, he's got his guaranteed money. He's got his no-trade clause. He's not really hurting as bad as some of the other NFL players that everybody wants to defend.
It also reeks of, and you mentioned the injury, the knee injury that he had, Peter. It reeks of, I know I'm going to ask out here, but let me get the money for sure before I do this. Let me not play 2020 without guaranteed money. Let me get that guaranteed money, and then I'll maneuver my way out of here. That's not heroic. It's not honorable. If that's the way, again, there might be something behind the scenes that we don't know about, because everything I've heard about Deshaun Watson is that he's a top-of-the-line dude. He's great in the community, great with charity, all of that. And, as the home of the Jets, I'd love to have him be on the Jets. I would celebrate it. But I wouldn't celebrate if he maneuvered his way and got the guaranteed money and then decided to say,
but at the same time, Michael, let's be realistic. He should have the guaranteed money in the first place. If we're talking about what's right is right and what's sacrosanct to doing the right things, players should have guaranteed money. The quarterback of your team, who's out there literally risking his life in football and his future well-being,
impossible. In a hard cap sport where people get hurt all the time, you cannot have guaranteed money.
$73.7 million of his contract is guaranteed.
Because he did that maneuvering. But can you blame him for wanting to do that this year?
Let me ask you this, Peter. Since he has the right to say, I want to go wherever I want to go, what would you say if the Texans say, okay, give us back the bonus check that we gave you? We gave you that check thinking you're going to be here for 5 years. You played here for a year. Give us the bonus check back. At least give us 80% of it back.
Well, no, I would have no issue with that. I mean, listen, it's not like I think he's completely in the right. This is just one of those things where it's easy to argue it completely black and white. There's gray here. I don't think he's like completely in the right. No, this is not ideal. I also think I struggle with a grown professional who's at the top of his sport, if he's unhappy with the way the job is going, not being able to leave that job.
Let's take it out of football, though, where contracts are kind of nebulous. What about in the world? You still feel that way? You sign a contract, you have to stay.
Yeah, but if I'm unhappy,
that contract.
Yeah, even if you're unhappy.
Yeah, but
I'll stay.
I would say that if I signed a contract and you started treating me like garbage every day and I felt completely disrespected, regardless of me signing it, I would feel every right to try to get out of it and leave. And we don't know what else has happened here that makes him feel. That's another huge part that makes this whole thing problematic to talk about.
Of course.
We ultimately don't know what's at the core of this.
Right, what they did or what they didn't do. We have
exactly.
No
one really knows.
You're right, Peter, you're right. If we were to find out that they were abusive to him in some way, then of course. But he also has a players association that could back him up and have ever got out of hand. Just sounds to me like he wanted a little bit more say on the direction of the organization and was boxed out from doing that.
And he signed this deal post D-Hop, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a part that's really interesting to me, because one of the worst things the Texans did was trade DeAndre Hopkins for peanuts. That was hands down one of the worst things they did, and it's one of the things you add to the conversation about why it makes sense DeAndre would want to leave. But then on your guy's side of it, he signed the deal in September after DeAndre was gone, which does not help his case.
Right, but it's not for nothing. I mean, the one thing you got to say is we could talk about he signed a deal. I mean, it wasn't like he signed the deal willy nilly. It's a 4-year, $160 million contract in which almost half of it is guaranteed. And a no trade clause. So maybe it was just a case of, hey, I'm not really happy here, but man, I can't turn down that money. And I'll try to make it work. And he goes out there and he balls. Right, he goes out there and has a fabulous season. They win 4 games. And he's like, I guess that's not going to work. Maybe just as simple as that.
Right?
Christopher Martin.
But unfortunately, Peter, in those situations, I don't know if you just have the right that when things don't work out the way you want to 4 months later, you just get to hit the reset button.
And last thing, Michael, I know you're trying to say something. Also, though, it might have been as simple as that, Don. He goes out. He's like, I'm going to give it my all. He gives it his all. They're terrible. J.J. Watt is saying out loud, I'm sorry we wasted your season. Other former greats, Andre Johnson, all these former Texans are all like, get out. Do whatever you can to get out. People who do not have a reputation for necessarily ripping people are saying Deshaun should do whatever he can to leave. So, yeah, maybe it's just as simple as that. He tried his best. It didn't work. They don't give him any say in the coach hiring. And he has all-time greats telling him to leave. He's just what am I doing here?
See, here's the question for me, Michael. Was he getting that advice before he signed the deal?
That would be problematic.
And did he ignore the advice because the money was just too outrageous to turn down? Because Peter's right. The guys that are speaking out are not guys that are like your typical, you know, disgruntled guys. I mean, so I'm wondering, did he actually get this advice beforehand and ignored it? Because it doesn't sound like the world all of a sudden changed overnight here. I mean, the Hopkins deal should have alerted everybody, get out. So I'm sure he probably got advice to get out.
Christopher Martin tweeted this, and it's amazing how the average fan doesn't know. He writes, teams trade players all the time without their consent. Are they also not honoring the contract? That's the system, Michael. Now the shoe's on the other foot and the bosses don't like it. They are honoring the contract, Christopher. If a player has a no-trade clause, they can't trade him. People don't understand. They are honoring the contract even if they trade you, unless you have a no-trade clause.
Right.
Deshaun Watson is not honoring his contract. He's not. He took guaranteed money in a no-trade clause, and now he does not want to be there. That's not honoring your contract. If you sign a 10-year deal without a no-trade clause and the team trades you in year number two, it stinks. But they're honoring their contract because I'll tell you what, Christopher, if they weren't, they wouldn't be allowed to. That's what a contract is. You wouldn't be allowed to be traded if you had a no-trade clause. So people have to get out of their head.
Right.
Just because you sign a contract doesn't mean you can't be traded. But when you sign a contract on your end, that means you're not going anywhere for those 5 years. He's breaking that agreement. He wants to break that agreement. He wants to be traded. And then on top of that, he has the gall to have a no-trade clause where now he wants to be traded to a specific team, which completely devalues the asset for the Texans.
And the shame of this is, right, even though the injured party appears to be Deshaun Watson, he's not. The typical NFL player that Peter is talking about is the guy that has no leverage and can't afford to hold out because he didn't get any guaranteed money. The players that are really being taken advantage of here are the third string centers, the practice squad guys. So if Deshaun Watson wins, do you think that's a victory for all those players that don't have Watson's leverage? You think it's going to change the system for them? Those are the guys you really should feel sorry for. The guys that are treated like beanbags during the course of their career, bounce from team to team, who aren't good enough to do what Watson is able to at least try to do. That's where the NFL owners are abusive to their players. They're the ones they don't care about. You have a 53-man roster in which you've got, if you're lucky, you'll have maybe a half a dozen stars on the team. The rest of the other guys that are not making guaranteed money, that are ACL away from bagging groceries, who don't have any money in the bank because none of the money is guaranteed, and can just get thrown aside and are hopping from training camp to training camp trying to keep a career going.
But it's all part of the same thing. Whether Deshaun's situation is better or not, this is what the system is. And they're all victim to it to a certain degree. Deshaun happens to be in a better situation than most people are, absolutely.
But Deshaun was smart. He got a lot of guaranteed money. You know, $73 million guaranteed puts him, I would think, in the top 10 earners in the entire league.
Oh, yeah,
just
for sure.
Off his guaranteed money. And then he got the no-trade clause, so he knew he was never going to be somebody that was going to be discarded. And then 4 months later, really bad season, you want out. I mean, that's a tough spot for him to be in. So I understand, Peter, where you're coming from, because it's not as cut and dried as it's being made out to be. But it's not an easy situation for him to be in.
All right, let's take a brief time out. We'll come back, take your phone calls. Michael Kasho on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg and you right here on Yes on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Michael Kay Show.
Deshaun Watson. All of us think it's a no-brainer. The Jets should do everything they can to get him. I wonder if Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh really want him. I wonder if all the draft capital that Douglas has collected is so important to him to build this team the right way that he doesn't want him. And maybe they really do believe in Sam Darnold.
It's a franchise that has not had a big-time quarterback in 50 years. Now you got a chance to get somebody, an established quarterback that has done it in this league, almost threw for 5,000 yards. Dynamic offensive presence. Seems to be the quarterback that is built for the future of the NFL. And you can have him. And you're going to have the arrogance to say, no, I'd rather hold on the picks and hope that I find the next Deshaun Watson on my watch.
The Michael Kay Show.
Is there a major difference between Deshaun Watson forcing his way out of Houston and Matt Stafford forcing his way out of Detroit?
On 98.7 ESPN.
And the answer is yes. I don't think the Lions want Matthew Stafford anymore.
Well, that would be a difference.
We keep talking about the Jets with Deshaun Watson. And Darren Orlovsky was on Greeny's television vehicle, Get Up. And he said the Giants should have an interest in it as well.
If I was Dave Gettleman of the New York Giants, I would take Daniel Jones, I would take Saquon Barkley, and I would take 3 first-round picks and call Houston and not allow them to get off the phone with me. As a general manager, in this moment, if you ever were going to take a swing, this is the swing to take.
That's
would
a
that,
lot.
Would that be too much, Don?
Wow.
I don't think Saquon has to be there.
Well, the whole idea is that's got to be the last straw, right? You get on the phone. Again, I don't know what their interest in Daniel Jones is going to be if they're but they're also not going to get the first round pick high enough to get a quarterback, right? So, I don't know what Daniel Jones does for them, but it gives them a quarterback. You almost have to throw in Saquon, right? Cuz they can't dance with the Dolphins or the Jets when you talk about the second and third overall pick.
Yeah,
with the Giants selecting 11th.
Yeah.
So they can't get a quarterback in this draft. You know, you hope that the Giants are going to be, you know, in a situation where they're not going to be the first or second overall pick next year. Maybe they'll be in the middle of the pack. Now, that's the best hope if you're a Giant fan. So you almost have to throw in Saquon.
That's a lot. I mean, that's why I don't like him when the Jets, you know, people say the Jets have to throw in players as well. I mean, the number 2 pick in the draft is pretty good.
Well, they don't have to because it's number 2 picks.
Yeah, I'm not giving up players. I mean, you're going to have to give up Darnold. Okay, you're getting a quarterback. You can give them a quarterback. I'm not giving up a defensive player, especially a young one, that the new coach loves. Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone had a Zoom meeting with the Yankee media today. And I had my Twitter meeting with Yankee fans last night. Boy, I'll tell you what. They don't like this team at all. They don't like the way this team has been built. This team is not a sure thing, which is a problem for them.
Yeah. And I'm the bad guy.
And the $210 million, they feel, I mean, I got phrases back like they're being cheap, penny pinching. It's mind-boggling. And, you know, the point that people make, well, they had a $250 million payroll this year. Okay. And they couldn't beat a team with a $50 million payroll. So if you're Hal Steinbrenner and you just lost a lot of money because you played in front of no crowds and you played a 60-game season, maybe you kind of got your nose out of joint and said, I just lost to a team with 20% of the payroll I have, you know what? Let's get under the luxury tax so I don't have to lose more money, and I'll go to 210. And then when you say that to people, they go, oh, the Yankees are worth $5 billion. It's a business. It's a year-to-year thing, no matter what. So they're worth $5 billion. That doesn't mean that he has $5 billion in his pocket. In order to get the $5 billion, they have to sell the team. So they're operating with a budget. And one thing that people didn't like, Don and Peter, that I brought up on Twitter a lot last night. They kept saying, and Buster only brought this up, and you know how I feel about Buster, that, well, the Yankee payroll hasn't increased in however many years, and the amount of money they generate has increased almost twofold. And, you know, the percentage of what their payroll is to what they bring in is not the same as other teams. Well, I think over the last decade, I might be off by a little bit, over the last 10 years, you know how much money they have to put into revenue sharing? $1 billion. Mm. So let's say that you have a $250 million payroll last year. Let's throw $100 million more that has to go to the Pirates and the Orioles and the Rays, the team that beat you. So imagine the gall you feel on that. And then the money they spend on foreign players, the money they spend on their analytics department, all of that stuff. So don't just tell me, well, their payroll is not commensurate to what the payroll of the Rays is for what they bring in. It's apples and wrenches. They pay out an incredible amount of money in revenue sharing. Now, I'm not going to hold the telethon for them. They're doing fine. But you can't call a team cheap that has the highest payroll in baseball.
But, see, this is what drives me crazy, and this is the point I was trying to make yesterday. This is what drives me crazy about those types of fans. And, again, I'm not talking about every Yankee fan. I'm talking about the Yankee fan that complains that they're cheap, that they're pinching pennies, that they're not spending enough money. It's specifically to you out there that talk about that. So I guess what you're admitting to me is that you did buy those championships in the 90s. Because if it's all about the money and it's not about just making the right decisions, then you must admit that the reason that they won 4 championships in 5 years was because of the payroll and because of the money. But I thought that was poison whenever you brought that up to Yankee fans, that they bought those championships.
I had people last night, Don. I don't know if you followed tonight. Maybe you were resting. I had people say, they didn't go out and get the best players. So that means they're not trying to win. So I said, oh, so they should have gotten Realmuto, Bauer, Springer, in addition to DJ LeMahieu, and let's throw in Brad Hand so they have a payroll of $310 million. That's the only thing that would make people happy.
Because they want to play a different sport. They want to play a different game. Because I'm a Yankee fan, and we've got the most money. We have to spend outrageous amount of money, have a Hall of Famer at every position, win the championship every year. That's what you want. So it's not really about decision-making. It's not about hiring the right general manager or manager and doing the right things with scouting and trying to be up on every trend that's happening in Major League Baseball. It's about just outspending everything. All right? So the Rays, they embarrassed you. Because they were able to do it with a quarter of the payroll and beat you on the field. So your answer isn't, let's try to get smarter. Let's try to figure out what they're drinking over there in Tampa. It's, oh, we're going to spend $100 million more than you to fix the problem. That's what the sport's supposed to be. And if you think it's that's the way it should be, then what you're telling me is that's the reason why you won in the 90s, because you outspent everything. But when I would bring that up in the 90s, Michael, I get jumped by Yankee fans. What are you talking about? Jeter's homegrown. Posada's homegrown. Pettit's homegrown. Bernie Williams is homegrown. What are you talking about? And that was the reality. They were a well-run organization that did spend a lot of money. But that's not the only way you win.
And then when I brought up I'm bringing this up because it was fascinating to me, because I do want to know what fans feel, because those are the people I'm broadcasting to on Yes. But I brought up the fact that they want to get under the luxury tax. And I wanted to throw this at you. I started the thing. I said, I got to ask Don this. So one person said, yeah, the Red Sox didn't care about going over the luxury tax when they won a World Series in 2018. But they cared enough to get under the luxury tax that they traded one of the best players in the game, just so they could piggyback David Price's contract to get that off the books and get under the luxury tax. And I always wonder, you know, people are going to kill Cashman. So I've been getting a lot of this today too. Oh, he's a terrible GM. He just won championship in 20 years with all the money he spent. Okay. I think they've made the playoffs in 18 of those 20 years. You know, the Red Sox, they win a championship, and they reset. So in the time that they've won the last 3 championships, they finished last, I think, 3 times.
Right.
And last year, they completely bagged the season. They had no intention of competing last year. None. How would Yankee fans feel about that? I know they'd love the championships, but would it be okay if you dropped the last place to reset every now and then? No, they would hate that. So right. You bring up the Red Sox, but you don't know the true meaning of what the Red Sox are doing. They reset the luxury tax and get a bad team every 4 or 5 years.
And listen, I don't want you to agree with me, Michael, because it puts you in a really tough spot, but this is what I was talking about yesterday. This ridiculous sense of entitlement that they just outspend all of your problems and not even appreciate what you have. You're right. You didn't have to go through the 2012 Bobby Valentine Red Sox season. Yeah, they won the championship the next year, but then you fall apart again. And now they're in a complete state of flux, which you're right. If all of a sudden the Yankees threw 2 years away, losing 200 games in 2 years, the fans would go nuts.
Oh, crazy.
Meanwhile, the Yankees were able to reset in 2016. That was their reset.
Who's the Yankees' best and most loved player?
Now.
We'll be Judge, right?
Well, probably Judge or LeMahieu.
Okay. Well, let's just say Judge because he's homegrown. Imagine if they traded Aaron Judge to get under their luxury tax. The Red Sox traded Mookie Betts. It's either Mookie Betts or Mike Trout is the best player in baseball. They traded one of the best players in baseball so they could get rid of David Price's contract and get under the luxury threshold. Can you imagine how people would react in New York if that happened? They didn't like it in Boston, I'll tell you that.
You haven't had to worry as a Yankee fan to get rid of players that you wanted to keep because they were trying to rebuild. The one time they had kind of a facsimile of a rebuild was in 2016. What did you trade away? Miller, who ended up falling apart anyway, which the Yankees knew was going to happen, and Chapman, who they were able to bring back. You know, you haven't had to suffer the indignity a lot of franchises have to of having to part ways with classic players and having great Yankees end their career someplace else. Jeter was able to finish here. Rivera was able to finish here. Paul O'Neill was able to finish here. Bernie was able to finish here. If the Yankees were a different team, Bernie probably would have signed that contract with the Red Sox and left. Yankee fans don't have to suffer like that. Yankee fans suffering is winning 92 games and missing the playoffs.
I know.
That's your suffering.
Or coming up a game short of the World Series.
Right.
Or making out of the divisional round. It's always something.
But, Peter, if I bring up money, they talk about, no, it's not about the money. But then your answer is always more money. You have a $210 million payroll, the highest payroll in baseball, and you want to have a $300 million payroll to win.
Can I tell you this one thing? You know how I feel about Brian, and I said this on Twitter yesterday. They're all saying that they should get rid of Cashman. Well, first of all, if Cashman was gotten rid of, so to speak, right? He'd be out of work for maybe a week as he decides which of many jobs he would take, and he would then become the highest paid GM in baseball. It might be now, but it's not like he would take a hit. Some team would desperately want Brian Cashman. So, and you know, as I'm saying, I'm a big fan of him and his work. But if you can't put together a team that could win a championship at $210 million, then something's wrong. You're not bringing in the right players. And you know, Aaron Boone, in talking today, said the difference between winning in the playoffs and losing in the playoffs and winning a World Series or losing is razor thin. You could have a really great team, and it could be something razor thin that stops it. So here's Cashman today talking about, is this a championship-caliber team? Here's the Yankee GM.
Well, we're about to find out. I wouldn't say we're a finished product. You never are. You're always, looking to improve yourself. And we've had championship-caliber teams, including last year. We were championship-caliber and a contender. And if we performed, obviously, better, we could have been representing our league in the World Series. But we didn't perform well enough and got sent home prematurely. And so, therefore, we're back at it, trying to reconfigure game plan appropriately and come up with a roster that's maybe a little bit stronger, maybe a little bit more resilient. But that doesn't mean that's what's going to play out. But we certainly are excited by the current crew that we have. A lot of the additions, I think, in terms of their personalities, their work ethic, their desire to win, I think they're going to fit right in with the cast of characters that we already had. So that is going to be good to have a collection of people that think the same way, work the same way, and fight for the same thing. So it just comes down to keeping them healthy and performing up to their abilities. And that's where the magic is going to really occur, or that's where the tragic will occur.
Now, the thing I disagree with Brian about, that wasn't a championship caliber team that went into the postseason. Maybe when they put it together, when they thought that Luis Severino was going to pitch and and Paxton was going to be part of the rotation. A championship caliber team does not start Davey Garcia in game two of a series and then take him out after one inning. They did that because they didn't believe in their – they had no number two starter. So that's not a championship caliber team. When they went into the playoffs, they were not because of injuries. Now, another thing that Cashman was asked about is Gleyber Torres, the shortstop long term.
He's our shortstop. Nothing more I can say than that. Pass long term. I mean, I'll ultimately we'll evaluate everything on a year in and year out basis, but he's our shortstop. As simple as that.
Not exactly a ringing endorsement, no. But he's a shortstop for 2021. That's what he's saying. Mm. Aaron Boone reacted to, remember that story that Marley had where Sanchez said he doesn't know why he was not told that, you know, he was not starting in the playoffs. And Aaron Boone was asked, did you talk to Sanchez about the postseason?
Yeah, well-written story by Marley.
Well, let me do it again.
Yeah, well-written story by Marley. That was really very detailed. Yeah, Gary and I had a very good conversation right after the season, actually. You know, I think a little bit of that article, one of the big takeaways was the lack of communication about Gary's role in the postseason. And I think a big reason for that was the postseason was a completely fluid situation. I made no decision to say Gary is benched. I was going home literally every night and discussing and sleeping on who I was going to start the next day. And a big reason for that was, one, how well Kyle Higashioka was playing. I think we all have seen what a great defender he is, but at that point in the year was also swinging the bat incredibly well, hitting for some power. So he was pushing himself into the conversation as much as anything. And much like the situation with Gardy and Frazier every night, between Gardy and Frazier and Gary and Higgy at that point of the year, it was a day by day which way I was going to go. And so that's why there was no, I guess, ahead of time conversation to say you're down, because he never really was. And I feel like if we were able to advance, he probably would have been my game one starter in the championship series.
And that's exactly what I told you about a couple of weeks ago. So he was then asked about his relationship with Sanchez.
Gary and I have had conversations since then, but also prior to. And my relationship with Gary is a strong one, continues to be a strong one, and I'm really excited about where he's at right now in his offseason and his preparation heading into camp. He's in Tampa now, and I'm excited to see what he's going to do for us this year. I feel like he's in a really good frame of mind as we get ready to enter camp.
And finally, he talked about getting LeMahieu back.
Obviously, I'm thrilled. I mean, he's been probably the best leadoff hitter in the game. He's probably been the MVP of the American League the last 2 years. I think everyone on this call understands certainly how much he's loved playing here, but just how revered he is in our clubhouse by the opposing players. And even though he's obviously understated and quiet, there's no question he's one of the leaders and somebody that so many people in our clubhouse not only look to, but look up to. And, you know, I talk to you guys a lot about our culture, and he is certainly one of the drivers of what I believe to be a very good one.
Well, there you have it. So they said a lot. Obviously, I'm sure that you'll hear more of what they said, but that's generally it. Cashman thinks this is a championship caliber team. Boone thinks this is a championship caliber team. And when you look at this team, the bottom line is, how do the Klubers and the Tyones perform? That's it. How do they perform? If they perform close to what they once were, it's a great rotation. If they kind of crap the bed, you know what? It's not that great, and then you're going to have to depend on the young players. And also, Brian revealed today that, you know when Severino's coming back? Late summer. Late summer's July, August. So don't expect him back in the first couple of months of the season. Tommy John is about an 18-month thing. It's not a year thing. Some people think it's a year thing. Some people think Syndergaard's coming back in a year. I don't think so. 18 months is more like it. And that really pushes you toward the end of the season. All right, we got a lot to think about. 1-800-919-3776. This portion of the Mike McKay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2x London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers, Picker Design, the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2x London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. When we come back, another opportunity to get a VIP access pass inside the huddle. That's a great thing that we're doing the Friday before the Super Bowl. So stick around for that. We'll take your phone calls. Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.